This talk is offered by Ordinary Mind Zendo. Ordinary Mind was founded by Barry Magid, Dharma heir of Charlotte Joko Beck, and is dedicated to her vision of a psychologically minded Zen practice adapted to the needs of American students practicing in the context of their everyday lives. Our public programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Lately, I've come to think that one of the clearest and most direct ways to investigate the Dharma and the nature of the self is to concentrate on one simple phrase, four words: I am my body. Now, although we know that all dharmas are forms of emptiness, to see emptiness, that is, impermanence, and its dharma companion interdependence in relation to the body, I think brings these sometimes very abstract ideas home to us in a very direct and personal way. One of the first things we all understand and experience about our bodies is that they're constantly changing. They undergo the slow, long-term changes of development and aging. Sometimes the more acute changes of illness or injury. We see in our relation to our body the most basic acts of resistance to impermanence that constitutes a self-centered nature, namely our attempts to control all the changes that happen in our body. We can organize whole identities, whole programs of self-nature around the care, the nurturance, the maintenance, the fixing, the preoccupation with how our body feels, how it looks. Is it aging? Is it strong? Is it weak? Okay. And some of these things are perfectly healthy and reasonable things to do. And yet all of them, one way or another, ultimately expose the limits of our ability to resist the inevitability of impermanence. And the other thing that the body demonstrates is interdependence. We may be tempted to say that the body is a separate entity bounded by the skin. But we quickly see that the body as it is cannot exist in isolation. And when you begin to talk about what the body is and how it functions, you immediately have to describe an enabling environment. And that environment includes, you know, both oxygen and nutrients and other people. If you talk about the condition of your body, it's constantly affected by what's outside it. You can't really conceive of the state of your body without reference to things like the temperature outside. Is it freezing or unbearably hot or comfortable? You can't talk about the body without reference to, is it tired? Is it hungry? Is it being touched? Is it the recipient of care or love? In all these ways, what it is defined by its surroundings, just as much as we couldn't begin to tell someone what a fish is without reference to water. Now, if we look at the four words as a phrase, I am my body, it reflects our natural tendency to separation, and that even as it asserts an identity, it creates a split between I and body, as if there are two things that we're going to somehow bring together and try to see as one. And our natural tendency, which in some ways is typified in Descartes, is an attempt to start with a disembodied I, a internal mental representation or sense of self that in some ways precedes or is independent of the body. Descartes says, I think, therefore I am. As if thinking is a disembodied, purely mental activity. And indeed, he would go on to try to justify the idea that there are fundamentally two kinds of substances in the world, mental and physical. And this is, we would now say, an untenable philosophy, but a very good description of a kind of psychological state or illusion that we're all subject to. And indeed, there's a whole history of spiritual and religious practice that wishes to assert exactly the opposite of these four words. They think that the beginning of spirituality is to say, I am not my body, to say that there is a something, a spirit, a soul, something that exists apart from the body, usually that is intended to endure internally after the body is gone. Yet in this practice, I suggest that we see that I think, I am, the subjectivity of self is one of the actions of the body. As we say, sit and feel your body breathe, we might also say, sit and feel your body think. Sit and feel your body creating a sense of self, of me, my sitting. I think it's important for us to come around to see the way in which selfing is a bodily function like breathing. If we think about, say, in evolutionary terms, the most rudimentary beginnings of self-consciousness, it probably exists in a creature's awareness of their body in space. And an animal, even if we don't think of them as having a symbolic representation, being pre-linguistic, an animal, even a very small creature, has an acute sense of up and down, where it is, its orientation to its environment, to its nutrients, to the things it needs and the things it needs to avoid. And just as an infant will develops awareness in relation to its movement of its own body, its relation to the mother's breast, sense of self is from the very beginning a bodily self. Say, I am my body, we're inevitably constructing the kind of statement that says there's an I separate and preceding the body, and that the body is somehow mine as an object or a possession. It's mine. And yet, the more and more we look at the nature of I and body, the more we see them as dissolving one into the other. Do I possess my body? Or does my body possess my sense of self? Does one stay constant? Do I have a constant sense of me as my body changes? Are we tempted to say, I am the same person I was at 5 years old, at 20 years old, and 60 years old? Even as my body's changing, it's still me? Yes and no. I think that the more we can allow ourselves to experience the body breathing, the body being, the body thinking, the body selfing, the more we'll bring home to ourselves the basic realities of change and interconnection. And the Dharma is fully present right here as we sit.